So we're holding on Membeys on the Bays, about halfway down the wide lines, about 2 dots. The Mishnah had mentioned that the Mashiach Muhammad, when he's giving the speech to the soldiers before they go to war, he mentioned to them that the Goyim you're fighting against are coming, relying on their great heroes like Goliath and like Shoivach, whereas you're coming coming relying on the strength of Eivishtet. So speaking of Shoivach, B'nai Amon Bo B'nai Tzchenish or Shoivach, hold on. So Ksiv Shoivach or Ksiv Shoivach. In Sefer Shmuel, in Shmuel Beis, when it tells the story of this war against Ammon and a coalition of other nations, that war, by the way, is when Capital Samach was composed by Tosef and Amnarayim, that's Aram Tover, it's all part of that long-running war. So in Shmuel, it names the general, calls him Shoivach. In Divrei Hayamim, it tells the story over again, and it calls him Shoifach, it calls him Shoifach for the faith. So what was his real name? Rabu Shmuel, Chadom or Shoifach Shmo, one of them says his real name was Shoifach, as it says in Divrei Hayamim, Voloma Nikra Shmo Shoivach, Sha'osnika Shoivach. The reason he's called Shoivach in Sefer Shmuel is because he was like a Shoivach. He was made like a Shoivach. So what does that mean? One possibility just means he was tall, like a Shoivach of a birdhouse, but tall and imposing. And then Yoyada brings up the possibility of Shoivach is actually, you have a bunch of different little compartments in it for the birds, as we learned about this concept in Beta. So therefore, he wore a uniform like that, had many different pockets in it for all kinds of different weaponry and arrows and whatnot to look more imposing and fearful. That's about the middle of the wide lines, the lines against Chadoma. So that's one. The Chadoma Shoivach Shmo. The other one says his real name was Shoivach. The Lomanik Shmo Shoivach. Shekolaroyo is a Nishpachofanim Kikitin. Because anybody who sees him is poured out in front of him like a pitcher. So either that means, Rashi on Divrei Hayamim over there says it means he poured out, he spilled people's blood like water. He was a fearless, mighty general. Or that people were afraid of him, they would melt to pieces in his presence. Since we mentioned that, and the Gemara, since we have this Machlokes Rav and Shmuel on how to darshan the names, on how to darshan the names in the Pesukim, so Gemara brings another Machlokes on a Pesuk where Rav and Shmuel argue on the meaning of it. Pesuk says, describing the Nebuchadnezzar's soldiers, Ashpasik Kever Pesurach, their Ashpa is like an open grave, Kulam Gibodim, they're almighty. Simple meaning of Ashpasa means their quivers, the containers they keep their arrows in. But the problem with that is, in what way is container of arrows, like in what way is it kever pasuach? In what way is it like an open grave? So therefore, the Gemara wants to find a different meaning. Rav Shmuel, Ba'amri Lord of Ami Ravasi, others say it's from Ami and Ravasi, argue. Chadomer, these soldiers in Rochanetzah were so powerful, the Shosh, Zot, and Chetz, they would shoot an arrow, they would create garbage heaps and garbage heaps, mounds and mounds of corpses. So you might say, okay, that doesn't mean they're mighty, it just means they're expert archers. No, Talmud Lama Kulam Gibodim, that's why the pasuk continues, they're all mighty. So it's not just that they have skill, it's that they have a lot of physical power.
They're experts,
I mean, maybe not so physically powerful, they just have skill. But the chiddush is that no, that's Kulam Gibodim, that they're mighty, they're physically powerful. You kind of do. To bend the bow is no simple thing. But yeah. So then, according to that, so ashposo then mean, even though again the simple meaning of ashposo means a quiver of arrows, but we're darshaning it to mean a garbage heap, a pile of corpses. B'chadama, the other explains, b'shal, these people are so powerful. B'shal sha'osin sochehem, when they go to the bathroom, osin ashposes shal devil. They create garbage heaps and garbage heaps of dung. Because they eat a lot, they're such mighty powerful people. They eat a lot, and therefore they produce a lot of waste. The Shema term of Meshecholim Yaimim. So you might say big deal. The fact that they produce a lot of waste means they have stomach problems. No, again, Talmud Lema Kulam Gibordim. The apostle continues, they're almighty. Don't think that that's a result of them being sick. On the contrary, it shows how powerful and then what physical specimens they are. How powerful and how much they're able to eat.
What's the point of praising the strength of
Zombies, because it's warning the Jewish people, be aware what's coming on you if you don't do Jehovah. So we can prove from this that the middle of the discussion just now said that you would think maybe the fact that they make a shvasas shal zevel, maybe it means the chole me'ayim. Shmami, no, we see from this, incidentally, ha'iman, the nafesh zivle, if a person produces a lot of waste, chole me'ayim, or it means he's got some kind of stomach disease. What's the relevance of that? Litzroch benapshei means that he should go to the trouble of trying to find some kind of remedy for it. He should realize that he's producing a lot of waste is the first stage of there's something wrong with his digestive system, and he better go to the doctor before it gets worse. Since we mentioned in this previous pasuk, we said it was either Rav and Shmuel or it was Rav Ami and Rav Asi. So now we bring another pasuk where Rav Ami and Rav Asi disagree on the meaning of it. Pasuk says, "De'aga b'leiv ish yashchena." The worry in the heart of a person, literally yashchena means that it brings it low. It depresses a person's heart. But part of the problem with that, if it means that, is da'aga is lashon nekeva, yashchena is lashon zachar, it should be tashchena. Literally, the meaning of yashchena literally means like to be bent low, like melashon ishtachavoya, shachuach, kasher yifarash ashoicha lishchos, there's a maimer in Likud Torah someplace that relates that to this also, like when a person is bowing in Shemana Esrei, is the idea to not just to bow their body, but to humble themselves on the inside. Like we're saying over here, yashchena, like it sort of not depresses, really, that's the wrong word for it, but like it makes the heart feel low. What does it mean? Ramami v'rabasi, chad amo yisichena midaite. One of them says it means you should put it out of your mind. The other one says what you should do if you have a worry that you're concerned about, tell it to other people. Tell it to friends of yours who can help you through it. So now you have an expression from the Tzemach Tzedek who says that we're saying achirim, they're achirim in that they're people in other bodies. They're people outside of yourself, but they have to be not achirim in the sense they have to be close to you in the sense that they know where you're really holding and can give you good advice. Who care about you? Yeah.
But could they even just hear it?
Both of them,
when you talk to somebody,
just listens to it. There is that. Yeah. The interesting work that's brought from the Munkacher. He says we know throughout Shas who's achirim Reb Meir. So if a person has a dover, you should tell it to the mayor. I would call the mayor on any. You should talk to the mayor Balanes. Yeah. The Mishnah continued that the Kohen, the Mashiach Muhammad, keeps on telling them, but after he continues the speech, but after Iyatim came, Hulu, that you are not like that. You have the Eibishter going. You have the Eibishter going with you, as the pasuk says, Ki Hashem Alekechem Ha'Hoy Lechimachem. So what's the expression Ha'Hoy Lechimachem, that he's going with you? The Chol Kach Lama. So what exactly is he adding? What is he adding by that saying that Hashem is going with you? If it just meant that Hashem is with you, Hashem alekechem yimachem, what's halicha? Mipnei Hashem b'chol kinuy of munochen ba'orin, because the name of the Eibishter and all the kinuyim of it are placed in the orin, which goes with them. The orin goes with them, and therefore, so they have holech yimachem is going with them. Now, what do we mean that all the name of Hashem and all the kinuyim are in the Orin? So, Marshal says, what are you talking about? The Orin had the Aseret HaDibros in it. It had the Luchos with the Aseret HaDibros. That has the Shem Avaya, it has the Shem Elikim, and that's it. Okay, he says that Kol Kinuyim doesn't mean literally. It just means that the name of the Eibishter is going along with you. Tosfos brings over here that first of all there may have been two Aronis, one with the broken luchos, one with the whole luchos, but there's also something that Mefarshim talk about the possibility I think it's brought actually in Tosefta or the Yerushalmi or something like that, but actually in the Aron there was an actual, I think it's from Rabbeinu Gershom also, that in the Aron there was actually a piece of parchment that had written on it all the names of the Eibishter. That's literally Hashem v'chol kinuyim munachin ba'aron. And thus we find that the Orion goes along with the army. Pasuk says, Moshe sent the soldiers to fight against Midian, 1,000 people per shevet to the army. Osam, he sent them, that's Pinchas, together with Pinchas. So the Gemara interjects to explain what does that mean. Osam, Abel Sanhedrin, the word Osam refers to the Sanhedrin, because once it says that he sent them, it doesn't have to repeat again Osam. So Osam means something that's equivalent to all of them, namely the Sanhedrin. Also, Ben Yoyada points out that Osam is Aleph to Tov, plus the letter Mem, representing that they kept the Torah like on all sides, like a Shlossman, which is closed on all sides. Pinchas Zem Meshuach Mechama, he sent along Pinchas because he's the Kohen Meshuach Mechama, he's the one who's giving the speech over here. The pasuk continues, they took along Uchleya Kodesh, the holy object, meaning Ze Oren Meluchas, right? Means they took along the Oren with the Luchas in it. Which actually the Yerushalmi says that's not so simple. The Yerushalmi brings another opinion that actually, according to the possibility that there were two Aronis, one with the broken Luchas, one with the whole Luchas, usually when they went to war, they were only supposed to take the one with the broken Luchas. The one time, according to that, the one time when they took the one with the whole Luchas in it, in the battle against the Plishtim at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, then it was captured by the Plishtim. And then he continues that the pasuk continues that they took along the trumpets for blowing. That means that they took along the shofars. Why we're changing chatzotzis to shofars? So a couple mafarshim give a number of different possibilities, including maybe they didn't need to take the chatzotzis because those are only meant for wars in Eretz Yisrael. This was outside Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, they're not meant to take along the chatzotzis. Just they take along the shofars. Or they're taking along the shofars for military battle, for military uses, because that's what they'd use to assemble the soldiers, and there were signals, and so forth, etc. The pasuk mentioned that the Eibush told Moshe, "Asei lecha shtei chatzotzis kesef et parshas ba'aloscha," and they had a number of different purposes, to call together the machnos, and to call the nasiim, and to break camp, etc. Then the pasuk mentions that when you have a battle in your land against an enemy, so one way of looking at it is that's only when in your land, in Eretz Yisrael. This was not. Therefore, no chatzotzis. Therefore, you just revert to shofars. Like I said, there's a few other possibilities that they bring up also. I think the Rashash is the one that brings up the possibility the Gemara mentions in Sukkah and in a couple of other places, that there's three things that were renamed after that eventually there were the names of things switched around. What we call a shofar used to be called a chatzotzra, and vice versa. So when it says over here shofar, it could mean what was called in the time of the Torah chatzotzra, and nowadays it's called shofar. Okay. Tana, we learn in a brisa. Loy lechinam holach Pinchas lemochamah. It's not for nothing that Pinchas went to war. Eli pora din avima. He went to pay back Midian for what they did to his ancestor, to his mother's father, his mother's ancestor, in other words. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Amadonim machiraisi amitzayim." The Midianim, which is the Midianim, they're closely related people, sold him off to Mitzrayim. So now he's coming to take revenge on them. Okay, Maharal points out doesn't literally mean he's coming to take revenge on generations ago, but it means that basically Yosef and Midian are opposite poles. Midian is a nation of Znus. That's the whole thing why they're going to war against them, is because they got the Jewish people involved in Znus, the Bnei Smayav. Yosef is the polar opposite of that. Pinchas is also the fact that he killed Zimri. Therefore, it's appropriate that he goes to overpower them. First, temporarily, the Midianim had been able to overpower Yosef and sell him. Now Pinchas is coming to redress the balance. Remember the Pinchas from Yosef? He's telling me Pinchas descends from Yosef. But the pasuk says that Elazar ben Aaron lokach lo mibnos Putiel lo Elisha, that Elazar had married from the daughters of Putiel, and Pinchas was their son. So who's Putiel? My love to Ophi Yisrael. Doesn't that mean, isn't Putiel another name for Yisrael? Shepitze Magol, my brother Sechavim. He's called Putiel because he fattened up calves for Avodah Zarah during the time before he became a ger, before he renounced Avodah Zarah and became a ger. So that's Ben Yoyada says it's the Shvat to show how much, even though he was so into Avodah Zarah, so much to this extent that he was fattening up calves for them, which is something that takes years. Yeah. Nevertheless, he threw that all away for the sake of the Eibishter, for the sake of Torah.
Probably he allowed people to call him by that way, by that name.
Well, there you have the question whether Zona means an innkeeper or not, but okay, yeah. Anyway, so Bechurna then, so Pinchas is descended from Yisrael. Where does Yosef come in? The answer is, Loi, me Yosef should pitbet the Yisrael. You could say that Putiel is another name for Yosef, who pitbet the Yisrael. It actually says pitbet means zilzo v'kavashai. You say he belittled it and he conquered it. He didn't consider it important. Rashbam in Bava Basra, the Gemara is also brought in Bava Basra, Rashbam says over there that pitbet means he argued against it. Whatever the case, so Putiel means Yosef. The question is, why? We know the famous thing that after Pinchas killed Zimri and Tosbi, the Shvatim are making fun of him. Re'isim ben Puti, Rashi brings out the pasuk. Re'isim ben Puti zesh. You see this ben Puti, ben Shepitim avi igla agolam avi ima agolam avodas lechavim, a son where his grandfather fattened up calves for avodas zara. A chutzpah yarim nasi Yisrael. He's killing a nasi among the Jewish people. And the Rebbe explains in a sitter why specifically are they focusing on that aspect of what Yisrael did. With the saying, fattening up calves, only that you're going to shech them afterwards for an avodah zarah, shows an extreme degree of cruelty. So they're arguing, you didn't do this you didn't go and kill Zimri and Cosby out of Mesiris Nefesh, out of that you want to prevent the Chilul Hashem. You're just a naturally cruel and violent person. You got it from Yisrael. Look at the kind of cruelty he did to these animals.
He had no exposure to war until that point.
Maybe not, yeah,
okay. The fact that we fatten up animals to eat them, maybe at least we're eating them,
they're
just...
To eat them, okay, you're getting enough. That, but, okay. Anyway. So
how could it be that it came from Yosef on that side?
That's the question. If we see that, you want to argue that Putiel is another name for Yosef, but we see that when the Shvatim are making fun of him, they're calling him Ben Puti, which is short for Putiel, and they're referring to the fact that Yisrael was involved in fattening up calves for sacrificing to idols. So where does Yosef come in?
So how is
Pinchas descended from Yosef? Yes. So now it's like this. Ella, I avur the imam Yosef, imam the imam Yisrael. It's either you have to go back another generation. Either that his mother's father is descended from Yosef, and his mother's mother is descended from Yisrael, or or the other way around, that his mother's side of the family is from that his mother's mother's family is from Yosef, and his mother's father's family is from Yisrael. In other words, when we say that Elazar married Mibnais Putiel, doesn't actually mean a daughter of Yisrael. It means a descendant, a granddaughter, great-granddaughter, whatever, of Yisrael. So there was enough time, so in between, in one of the previous generations, then they had intermarried with the family of Yosef. So he was a ger at that point, fine. Well, this is before Mount Torah, anyway. In fact, yeah, we can prove that. In fact, you can prove that. It must be that Putiel has double meaning. It means both Yisrael and it means Yosef. Because of the fact that it says Mibnois Putiel. So Rashi says the point is that otherwise it would have called him Putel. Because then it would either mean Shepitim or Shepitbit. The fact that it's Putiel, the Yud is making it like a plural. Rashbam explains the point is because it says Mibnois Putiel. It doesn't say, otherwise, if it just meant that it's a daughter or a descendant or whatever of Yisrael or of Yosef, as the case may be, it would say Bas Putiel. Mibnois Putiel implies that there's more than one daughter involved over here. But Tirei Mashma, so that's Mashma too. Good, Shmamina, so that proves it. So yes, Pinchas is descended on one side from Yisrael and on the other side from Yosef, and therefore, indeed, when he's going to war against Midian, it's to settle old scores with Midian for what they did to Yosef.
Nobody did anything to Moab.
Rashi says on the pasuk over there, because after all, Prida also does this. The lot this rule is going to come out from them, also because Moab only did it out of fear, Midian did it out of spite. Yeah. Mishnah goes on, continuing with the announcements to the soldiers. The officers should speak to the people, saying, which person has built a new house and not dedicated it, meaning not started living in it yet? Maybe you should go and return home. And then you have the other two categories, which the Mishnah will talk about later. Rashi says that the reason is because for each one of them it's a tremendous agus nefesh. You've gone to all the trouble of building a house, and somebody else is going to end up living in it before you. Same thing with a kerem, same thing with Eidas Isha. So therefore, like, the person's mind is not going to be able to be on fighting properly. No, the point is, like, he's going to have agnus nefesh. If he dies in battle, before he dies, knowing, like, I'm not even going to have a chance to live in this house that I went to all this trouble to build or buy, as the mission is going
to
say.
They have to go to the battlefield.
That's what we're saying. They have to go to the battlefield. If they only built the house and didn't live in it yet, then they go to the battlefield, but then after hearing this announcement, they return home.
But in fact, they have to go. They can't just stay home.
Right.
Knowing that
Right. And the Mishnah is also going to say, even though we don't make them part of the army, we make them part of the commissariat, though they're responsible for the supply lines. The Chalal also before we discuss the question with all these things, are we talking about if they have to go home from the war, or is it that they're allowed to, but they don't necessarily have to? Yeah, well, that's another question. Are we talking about does all this apply by Mohammed's Rishus or also by Mohammed's Mitzvah? Rambam, for example, says not. We'll have later in the parak, actually, by Mohammed's Mitzvah, even Chasim Echadre, Kalam of Hapasa. So no, there's no exceptions. Interesting thing, actually, that's brought that in Shmuel Aleph it tells how Shol suggests a shidduch between one of his daughters and David. First it's Merav, and then it doesn't end up working out with Merav, so he's betrothed to Michal, and then Shol tells him the price, the kedushin is going to be accomplished if you bring back 100 orlos plishtim. So the Medrash that says that the Plishtim figured when they heard that David is engaged to Michal, they figured, good, you know, we know enough of the Jews' Torah to know that in that case he's exempt from battle for a year. So that way we're safe for a year. Except they didn't realize that only applies to Mohammed's Rishus. This is Mohammed's Mitzvah, because the Plishtim are occupying parts of Israel. And therefore he went out and then dealt with them. So what does it mean, a house? Echad abonah beis ateven, regardless of whether it's a person built a house for straw, or beis abakar, a house for his cattle, a house, a building for his cattle, beis eitzim, a house for storing wood, beis oitzris, a house for storing like wine or oil or grain, Rashi says. Echad abonah, and whether you built it, v'echad alakeach, or whether you bought it, v'echad ayodosh, or whether you yashin it, v'echad shenitin lematana, or whether it was given to you as a present. The same rules apply across the board. If you haven't lived in it yet or had a chance to start using it yet, then you you go home from the battlefield. If you're renting it, the pasture is not.
When you rent the land or you lease the land and you build a house on it.
So there is an interesting question that I think the Minchas Chinuch brings up the point that in the times when the Yovel was noyig, when it comes to a kerem, if you buy property and plant a kerem on it, on the face of it, you're only entitled, you're not kinyan aguf in the property because it returns to the original owner on Yovel. All you have is kinyan payus. Maybe that's not enough to get you an exemption to go home. Maybe the same thing would apply also if you bought or rented or whatever property and build a house on it. Same idea. It eventually is going to go back to the owner. I don't know. Then the pasuk continues. Which person has planted a vineyard and not chiluloi? So Rashi says chiluloi means that you have the fourth year, the plants are netter to buy. You're supposed to take them to your shalayim and eat them, the same way you do ma'aseh sheni. Or practically speaking, you don't always take the fruit itself to your shalayim; it won't last. So you exchange it for money. You machadal it on money. You bring the money to your shalayim. That's what it's called, v'loy chiluloi, that you didn't have a chance yet to. None of the fruit became mutter yet to be redeemed as netzer avai. It was still orva. In other words, you never had a chance to use any of the fruit. The Ramban and the Ibn Ezra have a whole different explanation of v'loy chiluloi. They explain that chiluloi actually has a sort of a triple meaning. It comes from the word mocher, which means a dance. And from the word hollow, which means a flute, and from the word hallow, which means to praise the Eidishter. So like when it comes to the fourth year of an orchard or a vineyard or what have you, people would be really happy that they're now able to start enjoying the fruit, and they would make a whole song and as a whole dance and celebration and whatever and praise the Eidishter that they got this far, and that's the chiluloi. Then they buy food with that money in your shalayim and eat it over there, yeah. Yeah, so it's meant to be, but that's what the pasuk says. But that's the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra hold that right away there you get to the fourth year already. And actually, we'll talk on other days, the chalal, whether this whole concept of revai, way back in Brachos, we learned that there's actually machloikas, whether the whole concept of revai applies only to vineyards or to any fruit trees. Yeah. Again, echad anateh kerem, it's regardless whether a person plants a vineyard, v'echad anateh hamisha ilan emaychol, or a person plants five other kinds of fruit trees, v'afdil mechamesh etaminin, or even if it's five different types of fruit trees. So Rashi has over here, this big diagram you have, and Rashi is showing the configuration of five plants that make up a vineyard. The Rambam actually holds a little differently. The Rambam holds the configuration is not like we have it over here, a square and then one sticking out in the middle between them, but rather that you have three and then two. So three in one row, two in the next is the Rambam's configuration. I think the Katan of Ferach says that he found all the vineyard in Eretz Yisrael were arranged the way the Rambam says. But
when
you tree? Dots are meant to represent trees. But the question is also, does Rashi mean to say that you dafka have to have that configuration with any type, regardless whether it's grapevines or whether it's any other kind of trees? Or does he mean that that configuration is minimum for grapevines, but for other trees it can be any layout? Okay. Anyway, so after the Machamesh is a minute, you have five different kinds of trees. Echad HaNeteah, whether he's planting a new tree, Echad HaMavrich, or whether he's bending down a twig from the tree into the ground, and it's called layering. That you bend down a twig from it, you put one end of it into the dirt, and eventually it breaks off the parent tree and starts growing. And it's cloning, also it's called. That's Mavrich, yeah. Echad HaMarkiv, or whether you graft a branch from one tree onto another. And also whether you buy this vineyard or this orchard or whatever, whether you yashin it, or whether it was given to you as a gift. All the same rules apply.
After you got it as a gift, then you planted it, and then
you got it as a gift, and it was already planted. Yeah, the five trees or whatever were already planted. Yeah. No, because if you got the land as a gift and then you planted it, of course there's no chiddush in that. Next, the pasuk continues, which person has betrothed, has done kiddushin with a woman and not married her yet. Again, echad ma'aris tabsulav, echad ma'aris is almana, regardless of whether the erusin was with an unmarried, a never married girl or an almana, afilu shemeres yavam, or even if it's a shemeres yavam, so he did maimer with her, let's say, or not, maybe not even he did maimer, his brother died, he's now a yavam. She's a Shemeres Yavam. So already at that point, then it's considered, as we learned in Yavamis, not 30, you don't need anything else. All you need is Bia to be going Meret. So during that time, while she's a Shemeres Yavam, is the equivalent of between Erusin and Nisurin.
He doesn't need Mimer?
I mean, Midra Rabbanan needs Mimer, but not Midra Raisa. That's what we're talking about. So during the time between Erusin and Nisurin, he's called up to battle, yeah.
If he marries her right away.
If he marries her, then we're going to get that to the next part of the mission away. Even if he hears that his brother died in battle and he himself is in the army, then he gets an immediate exemption at that point, because at that point his sister-in-law is a Shemeres Yavam to him. Yeah, assuming, yeah, right. All of these groups of people listen to what the Kohen is saying at the battlefront, before the battle actually begins, while they're in the ranks. The Chodrin, and they return back home. They have to supply water and food to the army, so they have to be in the supply chain. They're responsible for repairing the roads, so they're not completely exempt. They don't serve in the army, but they still do home front service. The Elu She'en and Chozer, and the following people do not get an exemption to return. Habona Beis Sharach Sadru Mepesis, in the case of building a house, if all he builds is a gatehouse or an Achsadra, is a structure that's like a porch, sort of. It's closed in on three sides and open on the fourth. Or a mepeses, a gallery that you use to go to upstairs apartments. None of those are considered a base dira. None of those are a place that's suitable for living in. Or haneteah avei lone maichov v'chamishei lone strak. Somebody who plants only four fruit trees, not five, or five or more barren trees, like cedar trees or what have you. It means, a lot of times the mission uses all to mean or. Interesting that Rashi, by the way, I noticed that Rashi mentions shikmim as an example of something that's not an eighth tree, because sycamore tree does have fruits. They're not very important fruits, but they're still fruits. So, maybe there's different kinds of shikmas. Maybe some are grown for fruits, some aren't. Anyway, so those don't count. Or in the case of marriage, if he's remarrying his divorcee, so the pasuk had said it has to be isha chadasha, she's not chadasha to him. Or if it's a marriage that's also amon l'kain gadol, grusha v'cholot l'kain hedya, mamzeres in a sin of Yisrael, bas Yisrael l'mamzer l'nafin, in all those cases, since the marriage is also loy ha'yachoyzer, you don't get to return on the grounds of that.
But
Now, they talk about how is the Kohen Gadol going to maybe talking about Melchamas Mitzvah over here, or maybe indeed, maybe even in Melchamas Rishus, the Kohen Gadol might be able to go. Or Lot Dafka, it might be that there's, you know, we have the Mishnah's usual list of people who are also to marry based on Lot or whatever. So it's just putting the usual list, even though maybe not all of them are Nageya. They talk about also the Mamzer, how is the Mamzer going to battle. The Gemara mentioned in Kedushin that they would only have soldiers who are Miyuchas in the armies. The one answer that's given is maybe we're talking about here somebody who's a Mamzer that Abba. But it's still also for him to marry a regular Bat Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda, remember? Is it also if a person just builds his house in its original form, so his house fell down and he rebuilt it exactly the same way as it was before without adding any new extensions or anything, also he doesn't get to return from the battle. The halacha is not like that, by the way. Also a person who builds a house made out of bricks in Sharon. Sharon is basically the center of Eretz Yisrael on the coast over there, more or less from Tel Aviv to Netanya, is the Sharon. If you build a house of bricks over there, you also don't get to return, because the Gemara is going to point out on Mandalad right before the next Mishnah that the clay over there for bricks was very poor quality. You'd have to rebuild the house every couple of years. That's not considered, Rabbi Leazar says, that's not considered permanent enough to be considered bayis chadash. Elo she'en zazen mimkayim, and the following people don't move from their place at all, meaning they don't even get called up to the army in the first place, and they have to return home from the ranks, like we said before. Bona bayis v'chanochay, if you built a house and you did dedicate it, you did start living in it, during that first year you're living in the house, you're exempt. Not a kerem b'chiloi, or you planted a vineyard and you were mechalalit, you did have the year of neter avai. Or hanose es arusa, so he marries his arusa, so then during the first year, shana reshana. Hakonis es yuvimka, or if he marries and has bia with his yuvama, shenema, because you have a different pasuk that says, noki yil beitze shana achas, he should be clean, meaning free of any military duty, for his house for 1 year. So the beitze is a beitze. The word beitze means in house. Yiyah zekame. The word yiyah in the pasuk, because it could have just said naki lebeisoi, so the yiyah comes to add a vineyard. And the pasuk continues, the simach has ishtoi, the rishtoi. When it continues, that he should make his wife happy, that means his wife. So that covers all three of the cases.
And the
pasuk
says 1 year.
So 1 year, so yeah. So it covers all three cases, yeah. And when it continues, his wife, whom he married, that comes to include a yuvama. In those cases, these people not only are exempt from the army, they're even exempt from stateside service. They don't have to supply water and food, and they don't have to go repair the roads. The Gemara says, the pasuk says a dibur ha-shotrim. The pasuk starts off this list of exemptions by saying that the shotrim, the officers, speak. So yachol dvarim shel atman, you would think they just speak it on their own. The previous part, Atam Kred Mayem Lamacham Alei Veichem, the whole speech to encourage them, that we said before was the Meshuach Mochana. The pasuk begins, V'nigah Shachayim V'dibur Olam. All of a sudden here, you have the Dibur HaShotrim. So you would think that the Kohen has already left. They're just doing that on their own. No, Shu'im of the Yosku HaShotrim, but then the pasuk continues a few psukim later, that the Shotrim add, and they say, Mi'ah Yishayori V'racha Leivo. So that's the part where they say by themselves. That's the part where the Kohen is not involved in saying it. What does it mean over here then what it says about this part with the person who bought the who built the house, etc.? It's talking about the Dibur Meshuach Melchama Kosim Adaber. They're speaking what the Meshuach Melchama says. The Dibur HaShotrim, they're not saying it on their own. They're repeating what the Kohen is saying.
Probably not everybody can hear it.
That's the point. Okay, so what does it mean? Kohen medaber v'shoyke mashmiya. It means that for these announcements, the Kohen speaks it, the Kohen Meshuach Mohammed speaks it, and the shoytrim, the officers, make it heard to everybody. Because like I say, it's a large crowd, not everybody may hear yet. For Tony Chodder, we actually have three different devices. One says Kohen medaber v'shoyke mashmiya. One says that a Kohen speaks and an officer makes every ear. The Kohen Meshuach Mohammed, yeah. Another braita says that the Kohen speaks and the Kohen makes it heard, which the Rambam says means a different Kohen. So the Meshuach Mochama speaks and a different Kohen announces it out loud to everybody. That's the question. And then we have a third braita, Shoytu Medaba, Shoytu Mashmiya. That one officer speaks and the other one may, and another one makes it heard. So what do these three braitas mean? Amarabaya, okay, said it like this. There's three different parts. Mi v'nigash ad v'dibru, the first part from v'nigash akoyim v'dibru al-om, and he starts off Shema Yisrael, up and praying my dome, from there until the end of that speech, Kohen Medabu v'Kohen Mashmiya. The Kohen Mashmiya v'Chama speaks it, and another Kohen announces it to everybody. Mi v'dibru ad v'yosfu, from v'dibru ashotir mal'om le'emer, and they start off with mi o'isha shavon v'ayis hadash, etc., until the end of that part, so the part about the man who's engaged or who's betrothed to a woman. That's the Kohen Mashmiya v'Chama speaks it, and the shotir repeats it out loud for everybody. The last part where it says Yotzvah Shotim Medaber La'am, and they say Mi Oisha Yorei V'Rach Alev. If anybody who's fearful should go home, that's Shotim Medaber V'Shotim Mashmiya. One Shotim speaks it, and another one makes it heard by everybody. Mishnah said Mi Oisha Shavonim Bayis Chod V'Shchula, and the Mishnah said that it's not just if you built it, it's also if you bought it or Yarishin it or whatever, and not just a regular house, but also a storage place for store, etc. Turn it up, and we learn it right. Where do we learn all this? Asher Bono, when the Pasuk says that he built, Ein Li'el Asher Bono, so you would only know from that if he actually built the house. Lokach V'yorash V'nitzel Le'matan Minayin, how do we know the same thing applies if he bought it, or Yarshin it, or was given to him as a present? Tamad Lama, Mi'osh Asher Bono Bayis. No, because the Pasuk says, who is the person who built? The Mi'ho'ish is an extra word. It doesn't have to say Ho'ish. By adding Ho'ish, teaches us that it's not just if he himself built it, as long as it was built. Okay, Ein Li'el Bayis, fine. So you would only know that it means an actual house that you live in. Minayim Ladav is Beis HaKevin, or Beis HaBako, or Beis HaEitzim, or Beis HaOitzis. How do we know that it includes all these kinds of buildings that we mentioned in Mishnah? Tamad Lai Mashav Bonim V'Komachim. But it says, the Pasuk says that he built, meaning any kind of building, especially because it says Asher Bono before it even says Bayis. So Mi HaEish teaches us that regardless, this person who's involved. Asher Bono means that he built any kind of structure that is suitable for it. You could live in a tevin, a base of tevin, or base of bakar, or whatever, a pitch. And bias means an actual house.
Oh,
but
it's like you say, a bias before
bana? Yeah, good. Asher bias bana.
What does it mean with
Asher bana? In other words, what would you? It means any kind. It means anything that can be called a bias. Is suitable for this purpose.
And I would just like a reboy just to say that include that at the maximum.
So maybe then in that case it should also include the gatehouse or etc. No, that's why the post finishes also that he built a house. My bias a royal dura. A house is something that's suitable for living in. So it has to be something that's suitable for living in. A base of heaven, etc., you could live in a pitch. An achsadro, whatever, you can't really. One thing is, the Yerushalmi points out, and the Bavli points out, and Sota, the same thing. If it's a house less than 4x4 amos, also no exemption.
Because
it's not a shabona. Rabbi Lozman Yaakov, I mean, no, bias to Mashmar. Rabbi Lozman Yaakov says, no, the word bias means exactly what it sounds like. So in other words, only a house. So he says not like our Mishnah says, not a base of Tevin, not a base of Bakr, etc., only an actual house that you're going to live in. Okay. Now, the Pasuk could have said, instead of says he inaugurated it, meaning in other words, that's a mute. So therefore, Prakla Gavlon, that comes to exclude somebody who stole a house. He doesn't get an exemption from the army. In that case, you have to say that this Braisa is not like Rabbi Yitzhak Levi. The Rabbi Yitzhak Levi, Ha'om of Racha Levav, Zahamit Yar, Ma'aser Tzuriyodai. He says later on Bachnam Dalid, and then by the next Mishnah, that when it says, when the Shoytim announce whoever's Yorei V'Racha Levav, whoever's fearful and faint-hearted should go home, Rabbi Yitzhak Levi says it means a person who's afraid because he's done Averis. Stealing is an Aveira. So if you're going to tell me that we need a pasuk, we need the word chanoch choy to be mamayit, somebody who stole a house, implies if it weren't for that, you would think he could go to war. But why? According to Rabbi Yitzhak Levi, he's automatically exempt on the grounds of Aveira Shaviyadah. The answer is, I feel the same with Rabbi Yitzhak Levi. No, you could answer that the Braisa does go according to Rabbi Yitzhak Levi. Because you could have a case where he taka stole the house to begin with, but then he did tshuva and gave the owner the money for it. The question is, fine, in that case, then what's the problem? He's now considered a buyer. He bought the house, so then now he should get an exemption from the army. He's not a Goy. The answer is given to me, Ikri, but Torah says, also the Yavin, Loi. True, but since the house originally came to him as Gezel, then therefore that's what the Pasuk is being in mind. Yes, now you made good, good for you, now you're not, now you don't have a Vedas for the other, but the fact is, it's still not Chanochoi, it's still not the, you didn't inaugurate this house originally as it being yours. Incidentally, by the way, as the Yerushalmi points out, with all these three cases, we don't just take the person at his word. If he says, I bought a house or built a house or whatever, we don't just take him at his word. Otherwise, anybody can do that. We make him bring proof. Make him bring a bill of sale, or I guess in the case of builder, he takes the bill of sale or aid him or what have you. Yeah.
Otherwise, people see him going back.
Yeah. Okay, then the Mishnah continued, the Pasuk says, Mia Isha Shana Tafarim Chola, which person has planted a vineyard and not been Mechalal it? So again, the Mishnah said doesn't just apply to planting it, it also means if he bought it, and it also means not just a Kerem, but any other kind of tree, etc. Tana Rabbanan, when the Pasuk says, Hashem Nota, the vineyard that he planted, again, the Pasuk is Mia Isha, Hashem Nota Kerem Bola Chidloi. So Hashem Nota Emiel and Nota. So from that, from those words, you'd only know that it means if he actually planted it. Loka for Yorosh and Nitlai Matanaminayin. How do we know that also if he bought it or Yarshin it or was given to him as a present? Again, the Mio Ish is a Ribui, meaning as long as this person is involved with this Kerem, then it doesn't matter whether he himself planted it. Emiel of Kerem, so you only know from the Pasuk that it means a vineyard. How do we know that it includes five fruit trees? Even if it's of all different species, so an apple and an orange, etc. Again, you have the word Asher Nota. Now the Pasuk, again, since it says Asher Nota, and only then does it mention Kerem, so it implies as long as it's a planting, as long as it's something that can be considered a planting. Fine, and maybe it should include somebody who plants four fruit trees or five non-fruit trees. That's why when the pasuk says kerem, that's a meal, meaning it has to be something that's in some way similar to a kerem. Again, Rabbi Lezman and Yaakov, I'm a kerem kamashmai. So Rabbi Lezman and Yaakov all views on this also. He says, no, the word kerem means exactly what it sounds like. Gafta vineyard. Okay. The Pasuk had said, again, the Pasuk could have said, Mia Shanata Kerem Bolei Chilel, instead it added Vav, Bolei Chilel Loi. This is Prat L'Mavrich U'L'Mativ. This comes to exclude somebody who grafted a branch onto another tree or who layered, or cloned a tree by bending down a twig from it. Question is, why? Mishnah said that those people are exempt from going to battle. Yes, but there's a difference. The Braisa is talking about a Hakava, which is author. How is a Hakava author? If min b'she'eni min, if you're grafting a branch of one kind of tree onto another kind of tree, that's an issue. You don't get an exemption from the army for that. Just like the Mishnah said, you don't get an exemption for marrying or for betrothing a woman that you're author to. Whereas Harkava, the Mishnah is talking about Harkava's Heter, where you give the Harkava the Heter, and therefore fine. So they talk about, what would the answer be as far as Havracha, how is Havracha, how could there be that distinction between Heter and Isser? So they talk about maybe one possibility would be, the Havracha could also be done, the Isser, namely, that let's say you did it on Shabbos or something, versus the Heter, where you did it during the week. So Marsha asks that, and he answers that.
What's the question? In other words,
the question is that on the face of it, yes, he has a Vedas in his hands
because he was
Ma'akiv Be'isr. Yeah. Then shouldn't that alone, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, really be an automatic exemption from the army? Why do we need to say, why are we saying that he's still Chayiv? So Marsha asks that and gives the answer because when it comes to Havracha and Hakava, who says you did it? You may have had a sharecropper, you may have had a worker in your field who did that. As opposed to stealing a house is something that the person himself would have done. I don't think it makes a distinction. But there is another explanation that some Mephoshim give, is the difference is that with a Gzeva, it's an Avera Shemenonim L'Machavera. You can only fix it up by actually asking the person Mechila and paying him back for it. Here it's an Isser Shemenonim L'Machavera. And in fact, once the grafting has been done, even though it was the Isser, you're allowed to keep it. You're allowed to keep a tree that's grafted as Kalayim, you're just not allowed to do it in the first place. So therefore, once he does Tshuva, for it, then there's no further aveira left over here for there to be a problem. Having said that, though, the Rambam has a whole different explanation, has a whole different understanding, well, according to the Kesef Mishnah anyway, the Rambam has a whole different understanding of Hakavas Isser and Hakavas Heter, which is Hakavas Isser means where it's going to trigger the Isser of Orla, the kind of Hakava, which is the Gemara is going to talk about now, which triggers the Isser of Orla on the grafted branch. Hakavas Heter means the kind where it does not trigger the Isser of Orla. Isser and Heter, according to that, doesn't mean the person did something wrong versus not doing something wrong. It means the case where it's going to cause that there's going to be an inyan of Orla for the next 3 years versus the case where there's not. Because planting, when you hive in Orla, when you planted a new tree. So if it's the kind of thing, as the Gemara's going to start discussing now, we're going to have a little bit of a sugya here about some of the dinim of Orla.
A new tree
is chayiv and arla. So therefore, if it's new enough that it's chayiv and arla, then it's new enough that you exempt from the army.
As opposed to
if it's not considered new, as the Gemara is going to give an example, then it doesn't trigger arla, then it's not considered a not a kerem either. So the question is, how called a heter if you don't know? What exactly, when we're talking about grafting as a heter, what are we talking about? Ilema yalda b'yalda, are we talking about that you took a branch from a young tree, which is still within the years of Arla, and you grafted it onto another young tree? So, okay, there's still Arla involved. But so what? Typically, Dibayim Ahadim Hashem yalda Rishayna, fine, because you could argue he's already exempt from the army because of the original tree. Never mind the graft. The original tree is still within its 3 years, v'loy chilaloy, he has not yet had the chance to be mechalal it. Because it's still Orla and it's still Osir. Some Mepharshim ask, the Mepharshim point out, the Gemara could have answered that, okay, let's say you have the parent tree is already 2 years after it was planted, the baby tree, you're adding a branch now from a tree that's only a year old, let's say, so doesn't that maybe give you an extra year? The answer is that no. It means that what the Gemara is implying over here by saying Yalda the Yalda is talking about that they both end up going according to the parent tree. You're not going to get an extra year because of that young branch that you grafted on. El Yalda Biskena. So you're talking about you took a branch from a young tree and grafted it onto an old tree? Can't be. At this point, the Havah Minah would be that the original tree is old. You already planted it 5 or 6 or whatever years ago, so it's already chivalo. You don't get any exemption from the army because of it. But now, it's not Chayiv Norla anymore, right? And you already took care of Nether Revive. So, yeah. But now you're going to take a branch from a young tree and graft it onto that one. Maybe you would say that resets the clock.
No, it's not an Isser involved. So what are we talking about? What are we trying to
figure out? We're trying to figure out, when we say Hakavas Heter, the person has done Hakavas Heter, where the Mishnah says he's exempt from the army,
okay.
Why? On what grounds? So El Yalda Biskena, Vamar Abba Bar, Yalda Shesibcha Biskena, if you take a young branch and graft it onto an old tree, Batla Yalda Biskena, then the young branch is bottle to the old tree, the Ein Badin Orla, so the Din of Orla does not apply. Rashi over here implies that's a matter of bittul. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that also discusses this point, that also discusses this whole concept, where Rashi gives a different reason over there, because Zev is a Gerdim, because then you have at that point the tree the fruit that comes from that branch, you have the branch which intrinsically is Osir, is still Arla, and you have the parent tree, the stalk which you grafted it onto, which is Mutter, and then Zev is a Gerdim is Mutter. Anyway. So there's no din of Arla. So in that case, no din of Arla, then it shouldn't be considered a Natiya. That should potter you from the army.
In other words, there's no din of Arla because it's the Yamada of the Zakeya.
Because the stock is Zakeya.
Therefore, there's no din of Arla.
So therefore, no din of Arla, no din of Arla. Why should there be an exemption from the army?
Yalta
the Zakeya. But it's Hakavas Hetcher, because it's perfectly mutu to do, yeah.
And
according to the Rambam's definition of Hakavas Heter, it doesn't trigger Arla. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, La'olam Yalda B'Yalda. Okay, let's go back to the original possibility. We are talking about a young branch grafted onto a young tree. So why is he not potter on the grounds of the original young tree, which is still Chayiv and Arla? The reason is, let's say the original tree, he planted originally only meaning it to be to fill up a gap in the fence around this field, or for beams for building. It's a fruit tree, but he planted it for one of those purposes, not for the fruit. Fruit's going to come anyway. We learn in the first Mishnah of Arla, on a tale of Siaga Curtis, if somebody plants a tree to close up a breach and a fence, or for beans, plot them in Arla. That's plot them from Arla, and the fruit that grows on it, you're allowed to eat during those 3 years. So therefore, so no Arla, so he's not potter on the grounds of the original tree, but now when he grafted another branch onto it, where that branch he intends to use the fruit from it, that one now is considered an Nitzia.
And that was next to the fence or further away from the fence?
Doesn't matter. Okay, the question is, Maishna Yaldav is kind of the butler, Maishna Yaldav Yaldav is like butler. Fine, and what's the logic to say that if the young branch grafted onto an old tree, it's butler, and you say there's no din of Arla? Versus here, when you're saying you grafted a young branch onto a young tree, it's not bottle, and that young branch still has a din of Arla for the next 3 years, and it gains you an exemption from the army. What's the difference?
In my case, it was close to the fence we're talking about.
No, we said the original tree, the parent tree, the stalk is filling up the hole in the fence. This branch that you grafted on, you're intending to use, that branch you're not planning to use for siagra curtis, you're planning to use it for food. So what's the difference? The answer is hosem in mimlocha lo lav nas mehadeti, because the difference is when you have an old tree, you can't. There's no way to make it back into a young tree again. There's no way lahalacha to change your mind and make it back into a young tree, which is chayav in arla. Hosem in mimlocha lo bas mehadeti. Whereas when in the case of a tree which is still within its 3 years, when you planted it originally for siago for kurdus, you are able to change your mind. Because after all, a tree originally does exist for fruit. So any time during those 3 years that you change your mind, then the dinim of Arla will come into effect. And in fact, it's no different than the case of a tree that grew on its own. The Tanan, as we learn in the Mishnah, if a tree starts growing on its own, chayav in arla. That's chayav in arla. So the same thing over here. Even though you didn't plant this tree, so that in that case you didn't plant it for anything. Nobody planted it. It just started growing on its own, and it's chayav in arla. Same thing over here. You planted this tree, l'siaga v'kodesh, therefore it's potter. But as soon as you change your mind, it will be chayav. Therefore, you can't say that the new branch that you grafted onto it should be potter from the din of arla. Why do we need, when we're talking about this mavrich, and we're trying to figure out the case of it here, why is it that you would be potter from the army only for the mavrich, but not for the original tree? Why do we have to go through all this doichet? The loikma of kerem shal shnei shofin. Why don't we just say very simply that we're talking about a case of a vineyard or an orchard or whatever that belongs to two partners. So the original planting was done by Reuven. Now Shimon, the other partner, comes and grafts on a branch. And therefore you say Reuven was originally potter because of the original tree, and Shimon's going to be potter because of the graft. The high hodra adi day. So each one gets out of the army because of the part that they did. Reuven for planting the original vine, and Shimon for grafting onto it. The answer is Amar Papa Zoyse Meres. From this, then we can prove Kerem Shal Shnei Shutfen Ein Chozin Olam Erech Amuchama. In fact, if you have a vineyard that's owned by two partners, you don't get to return from battle for it, because neither one, you can't say that it's a Kerem of either one of them, because both of them own it. Each one owns all of it, basically. The question is, why? What's the difference? If you have, for example, our Mishnah had said that if a soldier hears in battle that his brother has died childless, then he goes home in order to do the Yibum. And we know that we know the Gemara is going to talk about it later, that even if you have five, if you have five other brothers of a dead soldier, they all go back, because any one of them could be the one to do Yibum.
Everyone has the potential to be.
Yeah. The answer is that.
So in our case, these shouldn't have the potential for what?
They're lechora. We're assuming the same way as the five brothers, only one of them is going to end up doing yibum, yeah. But all of them are potter until one of them actually does it. The same way, we should argue that these two shukim, each one owns the vineyard, each one has full ownership over the vineyard in partnership with the other. They should be potter. The answer is no. Because in that case, each one, you can say it's ishtay. One of them is going to end up marrying her, she's going to be 100% his wife. Here, you can't say that it's the vineyard of any one of them, because every single vine, they both own in partnership. Neither one has 100% ownership over it. They talk about it as an interesting question. The Mephoshim on the Rambam talk about it, and it turns out it's Machlokes in the Yerushalmi. Does the same thing apply to houses? What about if you have two people who own a house in partnership? Do they get to go home from the battle? And the answer is yes. Well, the answer is Machlokes, but according to the opinion that says yes, the difference is vineyards they're both using together. A house, each one has their own defined area in the house. Therefore, that's reason enough to exempt them.